Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. This Saturday, Ophira Eisenberg, Canadian stand-up comic, will perform in Club B10 at Mass Mocha in North Adams, Massachusetts. A veteran of the Moth and a mainstay of the New York City stand-up and storytelling circuit, the Calgary-bred Eisenberg was named one of New York Magazine's top 100 comics and is the host of NPR's new trivia and puzzle show, Ask Me Another. Ophira Eisenberg, welcome to The Roundtable.
Hi.
Hi. So,
hi, Sarah. How are you doing?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Very good. I'm talking to you from Scotland.
That's right. I was going to bring that up later, but let's leap right in. What's going on in Edinburgh?
I'm here doing some storytelling as part of the Edinburgh Festival.
You're doing the Liar Show.
We're doing the Liar Show, yeah, and also been telling stories on some other shows because it's a bit of a storytelling festival show that I'm part of. So we're doing the Liar Show, and it's very funny watching different audiences react to it from around the world because they don't understand right away why anyone would tell a story at all.
Right. So what is, I'm going to come back to that in a second, but what is the Liar Show? For people who aren't familiar, what is the Liar Show?
Oh, it's very fun. So it's a storytelling show where four people tell an incredible story about their life. Usually funny, but just something that is hard to believe because three of those people are telling the truth and one person has made up their entire story. So the audience listens to the four stories and then they have the opportunity to interrogate the performers, ask them questions, try to make them sweat, and then they vote as to who they think is the liar. And if they get it right, they win a prize.
So the question and answer part for the person who has made up the story is sort of like an improv game where they have to keep...
Yeah, exactly. And they have to decide whether they want to, you know, lead people down one way to make them think, oh, maybe I am lying, or, you know, just completely lie to support their story.
How did you get into storytelling on stage?
Actually, through the Moth.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing stand-up for years, and a friend of mine had gone to a few of the Moth slams at the time. They're at the Nuyorican Poetry Cafe in New York. Dragged me along. I watched it. I was totally intrigued and completely scared of the idea of doing anything like that.
Uh-huh.
But I was encouraged by some friends to put my name in the hat, and the first time I did, I got picked first on the show as well. I was like, I'm the first person's going to be. I was like, oh my goodness. And I went up there and told a story. You know, at the slams, the way the Moth slams work is you tell a 5-minute story based on whatever the theme is, and then they have just people in the audience judging you. It's not hardcore judging. It's sort of lighthearted, focused to the show judging.
Uh-huh.
But they give you a mark out of 10. And I don't think I did incredibly well, but it was so fun and flexing a totally different muscle from stand-up. And I got hooked. I just got hooked. I loved the format and just kept going back and back. And now, you know, I would say, 6 years later or so, storytelling is huge.
Yeah.
And the Moth Radio Hour has completely taken off, and, you know, they tour around, and there's all kinds of other storytelling shows.
You said a few minutes ago that it was interesting taking the storytelling to different audiences around the world because some people don't know why you would want to tell a story at all. Why do you think that is?
Well, because I think in some cases, like I know the Dutch, for example, think it's so confessional that
uh-huh.
they don't understand why you would tell these revealing, vulnerable, like admit these revealing,
yeah,
a little bit of a cultural difference. I mean, and that is true.
Sure.
At the same time, I go, well, you have a point. Other people, you know, the Scottish person didn't believe someone that was telling a story had another job, like they were telling a story, they're a biologist and telling a story about that, and they just didn't believe them because they were like, why would you tell stories if you have a good job?
Right? That all makes sense.
Just these little differences, very funny. But even though storytelling is the oldest thing on the planet, people are still sort of confused by how simple it sounds. You go, we're doing a storytelling show, and they're like, well, what is that?
Right. And it could seem, I mean, to somebody that it would be, I don't know, a lot of people getting up and being like, me, 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 in a way that wouldn't
right.
be appealing, but it, because it is so revealing and so often emotive and well-crafted, it's really fascinating.
Yes. Right. And it's the craft of it that changes it from sort of a narcissistic journal entry
right.
to something that is worth you know, performing and connecting an audience to it. I totally agree. It can run either way, depending on how much it's actually crafted and structured.
You said a minute ago that you were very nervous about telling your first story, your first moth story, even though you'd been doing stand-up for a long time, and that stand-up flexes different muscles. How are they different?
Well, I can say, I mean, there's the one side where when you do stand-up, there's one expectation that the audience has, which is you need to make them laugh.
Right.
And that really is the bottom line. They don't need to be moved. They don't need to go on a journey. They don't need to see you change.
Mm-mm.
But those are all things that are important to a good story. Like, you need to effectively become invested in whatever your, you know, story is about, whatever goal is you have in your story, whatever risks you're taking, for them to be invested in that emotionally. And then to have a story with a beginning, middle, and end, where you start as one person and you end as a different person, somehow changed or altered by whatever the event you're talking about. So it's just, you know, it's such a bigger task, frankly. And, I mean, on one hand, you don't necessarily have to make the audience laugh. It's great. Everyone loves a funny story, and it's also a great way to balance against any tension that you do have in your story.
Mm-hmm.
I love stand-up, and I will never not love stand-up, but I also love this idea of being able to explore a moment in your life a little deeper. The story that the moth has used on the podcast and whatever is one of the saddest things I've ever told. So that was a completely different side of me that I had finally a stage to kind of put together.
Right, and that's the story, The Accident.
Yeah, that doesn't go on the stand-up stage.
No, no, and it is beautifully told, really affecting, and available online. People can find it on YouTube if they want to look at it. We don't need to rehash the whole thing now, obviously.
Right,
but
sure.
And I'll link to it on our website. I did want to ask you if, when you tell a story like that, that is, I think, I mean, so perfectly encapsulates the mission of the moth, it really, really, really works. Do you then become associated with that one story in people's minds, or are you freed to just always tell a new story?
Yeah, I mean, I'm associated with that story because it obviously is floating around in a bunch of different mediums for people to consume, which is great. And it's kind of interesting because I host a lot for The Moth on the Road, and then I'm doing stand-up. So a lot of people, when they see me, even with The Moth, they see me in a different, completely different role where I'm, you know, telling little funnier stories in between acts and, you know, kind of being the sorbet and keeping the audience uplifted.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, they're like, oh, you told that story, and yet you're this completely different person right now on stage, which I actually really like that. I think that's great. So, and I know, you know, the times that The Moth has asked me for whatever reason, you know, oh, we would love for you to perform that particular story, I have to say, I'm always happy to do it. But anytime that happens, I sort of take a breath, and I'm like, okay, let's tell that story. You
right.
know, it's tough every time.
Of course. I mean, I can imagine.
Yeah.
How did you start as a stand-up? Why did you start doing stand-up comedy, trying stand-up comedy, and how long did it take you to get your legs underneath you?
A billion years.
That's
the answer to the final question.
Uh-huh.
1 billion years. It took a long time. But I wish I had a really succinct answer as to why I got into stand-up comedy. I think there's a lot of different factors why I ended up there, and it was certainly a choice. It's not like I fell into it. But I'm the youngest of six, so you could definitely make a case for the no one listened to me. And so try to get people's attention.
Mm-hmm.
Love me, love me! You know, that whole thing, very true. That is very true. I think I always prided myself on having a sense of humor, although as a young girl, it's not like I sat around with my other girlfriends listening to comedy records, because we just didn't do that. So I think my mother is very funny, all my brothers and sisters are very funny. I think there was a conscious kind of desire in me to want to join along and be as funny as them. I finished college with a cultural anthropology degree and was a little lost, because you can imagine the world really was my oyster with that cultural anthropology degree.
Sure.
Oh, what job should I take? Night manager at Kinko's? The opportunities. And eventually I took a stand-up comedy workshop kind of just for something to do. I didn't know what it was going to lead to. I wasn't really conscious about, oh, I'm going to become a stand-up comedian. But within that workshop, it was just a weekend, the man running it just told me that I should really consider it. And he said, my jokes were terrible, but he liked my presence on stage.
Uh-huh.
He said that, you know, that was something that you can do something with. I think he used the word talent. I don't like throwing that around because I think that it's such a vast word. I don't know exactly what he was seeing, but it sparked something in me, and it took me a long time to commit to it. But I did a little open mic here, and I did a little open mic there, and it was just, I just had to keep going with it. It was like a drug, basically.
You moved to New York City in 2001.
Yeah.
Why did you move to New York? Why New York?
I was living in Toronto, and I love Toronto. It's a great place. Toronto has a tendency to compare itself to New York a lot and uh-huh. be like, oh, we're just like New York, but we have this. Or we're just like New York, you know, we're the New York of Canada. And I thought, wow, I should really move to this place that everyone keeps talking about. So I decided, I had a friend in New York. I wanted to move to New York before, as I like to say, you know, before I got sick of living with milk crate furniture.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to, like, get there while I could still deal with kind of living, you know.
In a very small apartment.
Very, yeah, I didn't even know how small it would be. So I was like,
Toronto, we're just like New York, except we have bigger apartments.
Except that we have a like, very high standard of living.
Right.
Yeah. So I moved there sort of stereotypically with, you know, $300 in my pocket, got on a bus, hoping it would work out, seeing what I could do, and it was certainly a struggle. I've never had a city that was harder to figure out, but I wanted it so badly, and I wanted to overcome whatever the challenge was, so I just dug in my heels and stuck it out.
Do you get to watch a lot of other stand-ups in New York?
Oh, yeah, tons.
Anybody you recommend?
There are so many people that I love watching. There's a guy that I just adore. His name's Mike Vecchione. He just has some of the most clever jokes and such a playful delivery. Just wonderful. I love Corey Kahaney. She's been around for a while, fairly established, very well established, and she is wonderful, always something that makes me laugh. These people just know what they're doing. I love observational humor, of course, but I love it when people dive into who they are and just crack that open on stage and serve it up. That is my favorite. So those two people come to mind immediately. Susan Preckel, who is a dear friend also. I'm lucky enough to have some of these people as friends, because mm-hmm. it's nice having funny friends.
Sure.
But she is just, you know, just unique, different ideas. You know, you could say that every premise, and I feel the same way, oh, every premise has been tried and true, but there's so many people that are pulling a different angle on whatever that is, even if it's like dating or marriage or kids or whatever. They just have slightly something different to say about it, and it's just such a breath of fresh air. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Louis C.K. So is the world right now.
Right, yeah, he's the biggest.
Which is great, because that is, you know, that makes me very happy that mm-hmm. that guy and that style is being revered, because it's good stuff.
We only have a little time left before I have to let you go, but I would be remiss if we didn't talk about NPR's Ask Me Another, the quiz show
Yay!
That you host. How did that fall on your plate? How did you get that job?
It was practice. No, I was recommended. They were looking for a host and doing auditions, and I was actually recommended by Paul Ruest, who does... He's a sound engineer for The Moth
mm-hmm.
and the Moth Radio
Studios.
Hour.
Yep.
Yeah, and I work with him a lot, and he's such a wonderful man and thankfully a fan. And so he recommended me. They didn't know who I was, per se, which was fine, and I walked in. I got the information of what it was about and walked in, and we just had a really good connection and a good time, and I just thought, wow, this is a really fun project. And they kind of looked at me like, hey, you seem to know what you're doing. And I was like, hey, maybe I know what I'm doing. It was a nice combination. And then I did a call back and met Jonathan Coulton and some of the puzzle writers, and I just felt everything was such a natural rapport. And it was the first time in my life, I think, I've ever been sitting there going, I think I got this job. I've never felt like that before.
Right.
I mean, immediately after, I thought, oh, no, I'm just kidding myself. And then I went back to, or am I kidding myself? And at that point, you just have to, you know, try to go to sleep.
Sure. Well, no, I think that the rapport, the ease you're talking about comes through. When I listened to the first episode, I was like, how long have they been doing this? What have I've missed this. They've been doing it for years. Cause it's very.
Oh, that's so
flowy.
Nice. Thank you.
Sure. And how awesome is Jonathan Coulton?
Oh, he's amazing. And that was such a nice, I mean, you never know what you're getting, but it was such a nice surprise to sort of walk into this situation with people that we immediately could make each other laugh and just had a groove and professionalism. Just everything kind of fell into place fairly easily. It was still a lot of work, of course.
Of course.
We made mistakes along the way, which, you know, fingers crossed going forward, given another season, we will change and correct and make even better. So I'm just looking forward to that.
Ophira Eisenberg, thank you very much for your time. Safe travels back from Scotland and have a fantastic show at Mass Mocha.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Stand-up comedian Ophira Eisenberg will perform in Club B10 at Mass Mocha in North Adams, Massachusetts on Saturday at 8 p.m. Jonathan Morvay will open. To learn more, visit massmocha.org, massmoca.org. Ophira's website is ophiraeisenberg.com, OPHIRAEISENBERG.com, ophiraeisenberg.com. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.